The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
When they asked me to speak on marijuana, what I wanted to do is try to address things that I feel like would be most helpful for us, those that are engaged in Christian churches, on how to think through it. And we'll see this in two really primary areas of recreational and medicinal use, and what we do and how to navigate that in the world that we're in. And so that's what I want to walk through, and I want to do it, and I'm going to touch on this in kind of a mismatched order. Is stigma that exists when we say marijuana, science that exists that can help us to think through it as a topic, but then also scripture itself and what it has to say to us about thinking through the use of marijuana. And so that's where we're headed today. Well, just to be fair, I have a disclaimer to start with it. There are no free samples. I'm really sorry. I know that was maybe some of us were hoping, but just to be clear, I'm not going to advocate for the use of recreational marijuana in this talk. Even in listening to John in the session, I don't believe that this is an area that we have to compromise on, but I do think it is an area that would be helpful for us to think well about culturally, because of the type of stigma that is associated, just even when you hear the word marijuana. But really what I want to do today is to help us to think through, this is the thesis of my talk today, to help us to think, to be biblically based and culturally aware in response to the growing cultural acceptability of marijuana use recreationally and medicinally. And I think those are two separate things that we want to talk about today, and I hope that it's informative to you. But just as we start, I want to walk through a few terms, because when we hear the word marijuana, that actually means a lot of different things, and people mean different things by it. So I just want to address that briefly. The better term is actually cannabis. That's the actual plant that we're dealing with. And so most people, when they say marijuana, so when we say something like medicinal marijuana, what we actually mean is the cannabis plant or derivatives of it. And so this is the actual plant that we're talking about. Marijuana, though, deals with the actual dried leaves and flowers that we more associate with recreational drug use, things of that nature. Marijuana is, we'll see this in just a second, is what contains the THC, which is the thing that gives us the high. So THC is the actual psychoactive element that gives us the high, or I say gives us the, I'm using that generically, not that any of you are currently the us when I say that, but this is what gives people the high sensation when they use marijuana. It is the THC. And as we see as we walk through this, there's quite a bit of product that would be classified as marijuana or cannabis that doesn't have THC or such minimal amounts that it's negligible. And so we have to consider this when we think through it. This really comes into play with CBD. I won't try to pronounce what CBD actually represents, cannabidiol, D-oil or whatever. It's an extract from cannabis that does not have, if any at all, THC. There's just not a lot in it. So CBD, while it's an oil, or it can even be expressed in some different places, taken in pill form, eaten, there's a number of ways in which you can use it. It doesn't have the intoxicating psychoactive element in it. So this changes perhaps the way that we ought to think through this idea. And then we have the idea of hemp, which many of you are familiar with this. If you went through the same teenage years that I did, you probably had a bracelet or a necklace or something that had hemp in it. And we'll see in just a little while, hemp has been a part of the economic use in the United States, really even since before its founding. And so hemp is primarily used for things like rope or other industrial uses that it's used for that has very little THC. Again, this is going to be one of the big dividers for us. It just doesn't have a lot of THC in it. But if I say marijuana, if you come to a talk on marijuana, there's probably some things that go off in your mind. Well, this is one of those things, right? So you see this on a subway. You see your teen comes home and you smell marijuana. Whoever did this market placement was genius, because their first thought was, this calls for air guitar. So it's when you think marijuana, it has certain humorous thoughts about it. And if you're anything like me, I grew up on Scooby-Doo. And this guy for sure had to be on marijuana, just the way he talked and acted. And he talked to a dog quite frequently and could understand what he's saying. You know, but we also have, if you can remember these guys, back in the day, you had Cheech and Chong were comedic duo. Chong here is not doing so well. And if you look at the size of that blunt, or that's not even considered a joint anymore with the size of that, they made a very satirical, stereotypical joke about the marijuana culture. And this is in large part what, quite frankly, has shaped the way that we view marijuana. Whether it's that way or not, this is what shapes the way that we think about it. But had you been a part of what would have taken place in the 20s and 30s and 40s in the United States, you might have seen an advertisement like this. You would have seen things that were anti-marijuana propaganda that was produced either by the federal government or, during that time, media, that would have produced ads like this that would have been put all over the place to talk about the evils or the ills that would come about that if you smoked marijuana, that it's called the devil's weed, or there's some other more promiscuous pictures that show ladies draped over the devil's lap, and it made these claims for orgies and all these things that marijuana would make you do, which if you've ever used marijuana, there's actually not a whole lot that you want to do as opposed to what some of these pictures do. But they would make these things, and there was a reason for it. They were actually chasing something. And it's actually not too uncommon in our own world how the media uses things to shape our perception. But all joking aside, we're in a cultural moment, right? That there is growing acceptance and use of marijuana in our country and around the world. Not only recreationally, but medicinally. And are there things that are legitimately viable about that? And we want to ask that question. And what do we do with arguments that are like that? Well, marijuana is just like alcohol. And if it's legal, why can't we use it? Or it's just like caffeine. Why can't we use it? Caffeine is a psychoactive substance, and we use it for different things. Why can't we use that as well? And these are common things that are brought up. But I want to address a bit of that. To just say that marijuana is different, and we want to talk about that honestly. We want to be prepared as Christians to think about it. But I want to frame our discussion ultimately around the idea of the opioid epidemic. Unless you're just not aware, the level of opioid use in the United States has skyrocketed, and even with the things that we see currently, use has actually gone down. Prescribed by doctors, but it's continuing to be abused and used, and the access to it has increased. And so I want us to first think about where are we at culturally as relates to prescription drugs in general and use of pain-killing medication, and then help use that to frame how we would understand marijuana and where it fits in. And so when we talk to people in our churches or we talk to people in our community, that we're aware of what actually exists. And so that we don't seem out of touch or ignorant with what's going on. Or you might be like a friend of mine who's planting a church in Denver in the next 6 months. And so these are very real and near issues. But the opioid epidemic is severe in our country. And this is why I say that. In 2017 alone, doctors prescribing medication, 58% of American persons were prescribed opioid pain-killing medications. So 58 out of 100 people who were in the U.S., period, not just prescribed medicines, but in the U.S., were prescribed opioids. That's actually down around 20% from just a few years ago. So now you start thinking about we're actually closer to 70 and 80% of the population being prescribed opioid medication. And this is things like it's cold and flu season. You get a really bad cough. What does your doctor call in for you? Hydrocodone syrup. Okay, that is an opioid-based medication. And so there are a number of things that are going on. If we just talk raw numbers, in 2017, that's 189 million people who were prescribed some of the most highly addictive, widely abused drugs that we have in our country. That's a massive problem that we have, right? So it's not just those people we see on the news dying on park benches, but they're getting it from somewhere. And oftentimes, it's their very own doctors. So the National Institute on Drug Abuse reports that nearly 115 people die per day from opioid overdose. And this includes both prescription and illicit use. All right, so 115 people every single day. Now, sometimes when numbers like this get thrown out, it's, well, 115 doesn't seem that high with the comparative. 115 people dying of drug overdose is too much. It doesn't matter, particularly when we can control it. And as we'll see, there's substances that might prevent this sort of thing taking place. Now, what that actually means is that the CDC reports that 218,000 people died from opioid use from 1999 to 2017. 218,000 people died from some form of abuse or overdose from opioid pain-based medication. Now, that there have been a number of things that have been done by companies like the company that makes OxyContin. They have tried to reformulate their product so that it is less addictive. But as we see in 2017, you were five times more likely to die from opioid overdose than you would have been in 1999. So the problem is actually getting worse, regardless of what pharmaceutical companies, and no matter what we say culturally about legalization of certain things and whether or not we're protecting against opioids, it doesn't matter. Right? Widespread death. And just last year, really in the past several years, it's averaged almost 700 people in North Carolina alone are dying from opioid overdose. So that's not just out there, it's next door. Right? That there are people in our neighborhoods, these are people in our homes, these are people in our churches that are abusing opioid-based pain medications. And so this isn't something that we just turn an eye to. This is something that is very near and close to us now. And we have to pay attention to what's taking place. So this is something that I think has changed the discussion for me. And I think this is where we get to start addressing the stigma. The most closest relative to these opioid-based medications that we see, things like codeine and morphine or oxycodone, oxycontin, hydrocodone, or Vicodin, or any number of the drugs that your doctor may have prescribed for you for anything ranging from a cough that's keeping you up at night all the way to after surgery. The actual closest thing it's related to is heroin. Right? It's actually heroin. And so when we think about what's going on with opioids, it's not just that there isn't any stigma attached. It's that because it goes by a brand name, we don't typically associate the fact that what our doctors are prescribing us is heroin. And if it's not, it's close. It's one or two molecules away from being heroin, formed heroin. All right. And so, I mean, if you're like me, when I think heroin, I think that's really serious, right? But this isn't what our doctors typically say. And so many people don't question when they're prescribed opioids. It's my back hurts or I'm recovering or I have a cough. And we take this medication without really much thought to whether diluted or not, that this is a heroin-like or type product. We just don't question it much. We simply a lot of times go with whatever our doctor tells us. And I think this is because there's no stigma attached because there's a brand name attached. Whereas if I say marijuana, we have all kinds of stereotypes, or we think of that smell, or we think of certain situations or people we knew. We have all these things attached to marijuana. Whereas when we hear opioid or we hear morphine, we don't think heroin, right? But if our doctor were to say to us, oh, you don't feel well, you're in pain, let me prescribe you heroin. That would probably cause you some pause about what sort of doctor you were going to. But because they say morphine, or they say hydrocodone, we typically don't stop and ask what's going on. But I bet if your doctor said, I'm going to prescribe you something that's very, very similar to heroin, both in its substance, the high that it's going to create for you, and the addiction that you're going to get from it, I'm going to prescribe that to you to make you feel better. That would probably actually cause, I would like to think, that would cause us to pause a little bit more than just heading down to the CVS and getting it filled. Right? So this issue isn't, is it with the use of certain drugs for different types of either pain management or any other consideration like that? The actual issue is the stigma that's attached to it. It's not the science. It's not anything like that. It's that if we say a brand name like Vicodin or we say the word marijuana, different things go off in our mind. And so the opioid epidemic has everything to do with how we think through this issue of marijuana and cannabis and its uses and how we go about dealing with the issue. And so, why am I bringing up opioid use before we talk about marijuana? And here's why. There are two primary issues that come up when we think about marijuana. And first is recreational, and we're going to address that. Because of the widespread amount of use and cultural acceptance that is taking place as it relates to recreational use, we have to be able to address that as a church and as evangelical believers. We need to be prepared to do that. But a second equally important idea is the use of cannabis for medicinal purposes. And how do we think about that as Christians? Because if we say marijuana, we remove the stigma and we actually look at what it can benefit and what research is showing us currently related to medicinal use, perhaps that door is open for us, and we'll see. And perhaps that can help us when we think about the opioid crisis. So the medicinal uses of marijuana are often very similar, if not better than the pain alleviating products or uses of opioids. Now, where we stand currently, and I think this is as current as possible, medical use of marijuana is legal in 31 states and also the District of Columbia. The latest research tells us that about 85% of Americans approve of marijuana for medicinal purposes, just in terms of statistics and polling. So that means your neighbor thinks it's fine. Okay, so why is that? Recreational use is legal in 10 states and the District of Columbia. And so this is, and it's going fast. It's going fast about how it's passing. Not that long ago, it's a funny joke, but House Bill 420 was presented in Congress. If you don't know that joke, I can't help you for that. But House Bill 420 was presented, and it was an attempt to legalize the recreational use of marijuana nationally. Right. So right now, it is a state law. It is state-based. But there are efforts by those in the federal government to make it federal law, that no state could outlaw the recreational use of it. So while it is humorous that it was House Bill 420, this is something that we have to pay attention to culturally, just like it might be something else. And so cultural acceptance of marijuana, both medicinally and recreationally, is before us. And I think as Christians that we need to be prepared, not just reactionary, but prepared to deal with it, to know what the issues are. As we talk with our neighbors, it may never come up. But in our culture, in our world, it is coming up. And so how do we think about it in terms of legal challenges? How do we stand against it in the culture as it relates to recreational use and other things? Briefly, truly briefly, I don't want to do a full history lesson, but I want to give you an idea about how the thoughts and the stigma of marijuana has changed throughout our nation's history. Really, for about 300 years, from the 1600s almost to the start of the 20th century, hemp is just another strain of cannabis. Okay, so hemp was actually, by some states, required to be grown. So Virginia in 1619 said that if you were a farmer, you were growing hemp. Right, so it wasn't outlawed. Now, hemp isn't as easily smoked. It can be. But it doesn't have as high of a THC use. But cannabis wasn't viewed as detrimental. Actually, it was encouraged by the federal government to be grown. And even by the time we get to the post-Civil War time, we begin to see hemp, but namely cannabis and marijuana, used medicinally. It was sold as an over-the-counter medication. Also, so was cocaine. So I'm not saying it was okay. I'm just telling you that that's what was taking place in our country. There wasn't a stigma attached to it. There wasn't a lot of science behind it either. It's not until we get to the 1900s and through the 1920s that we begin to see a great increase in the use of recreational, but we also begin to see a negative side effect that it's beginning to be associated with immigrants and those of a lower economic status. And so this is when this is really beginning. And that's really what's going to shape the idea of the stigma that takes place throughout the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. And we'll see that in just a second. But for the mass population, marijuana use really saw its greatest increase in use during the Great Depression. The Great Depression, it was the Great Depression, and people would use any number of narcotics and other things to numb what was taking place. And marijuana saw an increase in recreational use for that very reason. But by the time we get to 1931, 29 states have outlawed the use of marijuana, just completely against the board. We'll see that marijuana has had a strange legal history. By the 1930s, we have a couple of different things that have taken place. So the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, and this is an increase of narcotics across the board, up to and including things like hashish and other opium You've heard of those things before. In 1932, they make it a state's rights issue, a state law issue, not a federal issue. And then 1936, this is where the propaganda really takes place. There was a movie made called Reefer Madness. And it was at the time, because you couldn't show drug use or anything intoxicating being used in movie and TV, it was for adults only. It would be marked as NC-17 in our world today. And it was meant to be an anti-marijuana propaganda film. Many of the scenes just showed teenagers laying around half clothed. It showed widespread violence and aggravated assaults. It showed really what they were trying to convince the general public was that marijuana will lead you to do violent things, have sex all over the place, and you'll be a good for nothing. And this is really what's said about what we think of in our, we think of Cheech and Chong, right? And this is where it started. It was a film made in 1936, and the federal government was supporting this. In 1937, though, they passed the Marijuana Tax Act, which this is what the government loves to do. Well, if you can sell it and we can tax it, let's figure this out. And so they did that even in 1937, which is one of the leading reasons that recreational marijuana is passing today. It's not just public support, but it's taxation. And so they did this in 1937. You could use it for medicinal purposes. You could use it as an elixir, as an additive to different things, and they taxed it and made money off of it. Now, the 50s is really begins what we're more familiar with culturally, is it begins mandatory sentences for the possession of marijuana, as in the 1950s. The government is using, they're trying to outlaw narcotic use, and these are many good strides, but one of the things they do is create mandatory sentences. But one of those mandatory sentences is that for the first, if you were convicted of possession of marijuana, it carried with it a federal sentence of 2 to 10 years and a fine up to $20,000. In the 1950s, that's incredible. You're looking at a $100,000 fine in 2 to 10 years in a federal penitentiary for possession of marijuana of any amount. Well, if you're going to go extreme, that's a great way to do it. Right? That's a great way to do it. But by the time we get through the 50s, we get into the 60s, two presidents, Kennedy and Johnson, both commission reports to be presented about, is marijuana, does it lead to violence, and is it a gateway drug? And both of those presidential commissions come back and say, no. Actually, marijuana use does not promote further violence, and it's actually not a gateway drug. Now, that's the reason that I want to mention gateway drug. This is oftentimes one of the reasons that we argue against its use. But here's what these commissions found. If you were willing to do marijuana, you were probably willing to try other stuff too. If you weren't willing to try marijuana, you probably weren't willing to try other stuff too. And so the connection wasn't that you started with marijuana and moved on. That does happen. Statistically, that happens at about around a 4 to 6% rate. So it's not that great of a gateway drug. The better gateway drug in our culture is opioids, right? The number of people that begin abusing opioid prescription painkillers actually move at about a 24% rate into heroin use. So the actual greater gateway drug is the opioid prescription that some of us may even have on our counters now, as opposed to presidential commissions are finding that it's just, if you're willing to do drugs, you're willing to do almost any kind of drug. Not necessarily, you don't typically stop at marijuana. You're willing to find something else. So it wasn't quite the gateway drug that they had presumed it to be. And so that being the case, by the time we get to the 70s, the mandatory sentences start to fall away. Maybe marijuana is not as bad as we thought it was. And there's actually a bipartisan congressional committee that comes, the Schaefer Commission, that actually recommends to President Nixon to decriminalize marijuana across the board. So this is actually taking place in the 70s, not 2017. This is taking place in the 70s, that they're recommending the president to decriminalize marijuana. Nixon rejects that, but it's at least on the table, according to Congress. And so based on this, 11 states decriminalize it almost immediately. And so there's a cultural openness to recreational marijuana, and there's more science that's beginning to be done to understand what cannabis and marijuana is. But then we hit the 80s, and one of the major things that comes back in the 80s is what we know now as the war on drugs. If you remember the frying pan illustration, right, that this is your brain, and this is your brain on drugs, and it's frying. there's some truth to that. So we'll address that in just a minute. Drugs don't always do your brains any favors. But we see on the war on drugs some things that were reintroduced were things like mandatory sentencing. It equated marijuana with every other type of drug. It created a flat plane of understanding. There was no gray area. There was no scale. So what that meant was if you were found with 100 plants of marijuana, you might as well have had 100 grams of heroin, which we know culturally, scientifically, in every other realm that 100 grams of heroin is infinitely worse than 100 plants of marijuana. It doesn't mean that they're not both drugs. It just means that on a scale, heroin has far more damaging effects on the body and culturally in terms of public harm than 100 plants of marijuana would be. And this doesn't even have to be. This is the cannabis plant. It doesn't even have to be in its usable form. Right? So this went to another extreme. We re-entered mandatory sentences. And so this is also where we get the idea of three strikes, you're out. It doesn't matter. If you have three drug-related offenses, you can get a life sentence. So if you had an ounce of marijuana and you get pulled over, an ounce of marijuana and you get stopped, ounce of marijuana, you're pulled over again. Number one, you've got to learn to drive better. You need somebody to help you out. But those three offenses, you could get a life sentence for. Which seems strange to us when you think about our DUI laws in our country. Right? But three strikes, you get a life sentence. Right? If you were found to be a kingpin or you were a dispenser or whatever else, you could actually get the death penalty. So this was an extreme step taken by the federal government to outlaw narcotics use. And there's a part of that we want to applaud. We want to eliminate these things because of the cultural harm that they bring. But it also creates mass incarceration and a number of other issues culturally that we have. And these are some things when our laws don't typically line up, when we think DUIs as opposed to possession of marijuana. In 1996, California led the way in a lot of things like they did with medicinal use. Medical marijuana was reintroduced in 1996 in California. And today I mentioned this, that there are a number of states that have it available both recreationally and medicinally. Now let's talk for a minute about recreational use. And this is why I don't have any samples today. Recreational use, I believe that the Bible commands us to be sober-minded. Sober-minded. And this addresses any number of narcotics, drugs, even up to and including the pain-killing medications that we take, that the Bible calls us to be sober-minded, and that the recreational use of marijuana and its forms violate this Christian command, the biblical command to be sober-minded and alert. And so a couple texts just to illustrate this. 1 Thessalonians 5, 6 through 8 says, "So then, let us not sleep like the rest, but let us stay awake." That phrase, stay awake, is to be sober-minded and be self-controlled. "For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk, get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be self-controlled and put on the armor of faith and love and helmet of hope and salvation." Further, 1 Peter says in 4:7 says, "The end of all things is near. Therefore, be alert and sober-minded for prayer." Well, the recreational use of marijuana, I believe, stands in direct contradiction to these verses. And we'll see this in just a minute. It does not take much THC at all to move a person towards intoxication. And so that poses a couple questions for us. How is this any different than, or how is this like, things like alcohol? Well, marijuana and alcohol are not similar. Right, they have some correspondence, as one can make you intoxicated, so can the other. But the better analogy is actually between marijuana consumption and drunkenness. Right, so that escalates quickly. Right, so now we're no longer asking a question of what's permissible in recreational use because it's better equated to drunkenness. And here's why. We look at things like this. Don't be get drunk with wine, which leads to reckless living, but filled by the Spirit. What is it that's controlling or enabling or allowing your mind to work in its fullest extent? And does marijuana prevent that from happening? Well, I think so. A lack of sobriety, this intoxication that takes place with marijuana, prevents alertness to surroundings, sensitivity to the Spirit, and clarity for the spiritual battle. This 1 Peter 5:8, I try to picture someone on safari smoking some good marijuana and walking out with the lions. It just doesn't seem to line up very well. And if this is what Peter tells us that the adversary, the devil, is prowling around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. I've got a feeling that Shaggy's first, right? That he's going down first, unless Scooby gets in the way. Further, recreational use of marijuana is not like caffeine. And here's what I mean by that. Both of them have psychoactive principles, right? There's a funny video online where you can see that they talk about the most widely used psychoactive substance in the world is coffee. But the purposes of each are vastly different. They're vastly different, right? We use caffeine, which is a psychoactive substance, to remove fogginess or to help us wake up or to see more clearly. So that seems to actually move towards sober-mindedness and alertness. Whereas the very foundation of marijuana and THC is meant to produce fogginess, to produce numbness, right? To eliminate our ability to think well about things. Recreational marijuana in its intent is used to numb the mind or the body and is meant to distort reality. And so intoxication, depending on all the various strains of cannabis and marijuana that exist, with all these various strains, depending on which one, it could take as little as one puff. I remember when I was a kid, there was the joke about one hit a quitta. It only took one hit and it made you want to quit, right? So that being the case, all it took was one hit from that strain and you were intoxicated. And so it doesn't take very much THC to intoxicate and overtake your brain. And this is where I think the idea of intoxication comes into play. So it's not like caffeine where we use it to wake up a little bit. And so I do not believe that recreational use of marijuana is acceptable for Christians. I believe that it violates the concept of sobriety. Regardless of some cultural arguments, it does have addictive properties in it. But not just physical. About 1 in 10 persons who regularly use marijuana become physically addicted. But it's not a physical addiction, I think, that creates many of the problems. What creates many of the problems is a mental or emotional dependence upon it. I can't deal with my anxiety without, right? And that could be something other than marijuana, but that's a lot of what the addiction that takes place with marijuana is. I need this so that I can. That might not be a physical, it might be a mental or emotional addiction, and it has to be addressed. Marijuana intoxication, according to the CDC or the National Institute of Drug Abuse, that it is noted for its lethargy and reduced ambition. So some of the stereotype is true. Some of the stereotype is true. You don't typically smoke marijuana and run a marathon. I guess someone could, but that's not typically what it's used for. All right. The American Psychiatric Association calls it amotivational syndrome. They've actually had to create a name for it so that they can address what happens to you when you recreationally use marijuana. Further, long-term marijuana use makes you dumber. So do a lot of other drugs, but just quite frankly, it makes you dumber. Okay, and there's not much disagreement about that. Further, more recent, with the idea of recreational marijuana, there's been two studies done recently looking at both Oregon and Colorado to determine whether or not recreational use has done what it said it would do. One of the primary things, well, three things. Number one, it has created greater tax revenue for those states. So the government's getting theirs. But number two, that it would decrease street selling of marijuana. It actually has not done that. You know why? Tax products cost more. So they can buy it on the black market and they still get it for less. It's actually in California, about 80% of the marijuana that they produce cannot be consumed by its citizens. So what are they doing with it? Well, those growers and those farmers are sending it east and it ends up in places like Colorado where it's bought off the street without government taxation. Further, it has actually not reduced violent crimes. In Colorado alone, they've seen an increase by nearly 10% in the violent crimes that have taken place. So basically, if we control it, if we do this the right way, if we have dispensaries, we do all these things, people will stop selling it on the streets and violent crime will go down. It's not happening. And so what we've been promised about recreational marijuana hasn't come true. This is why I believe it's important for Christians to stay involved in preventing the legalization of recreational use of marijuana. And so this is something in our own state of North Carolina that we've got to continue to fight for. further. For it's the data is a bit unclear, but what we do know is that marijuana for some people, just like every other drug, right? There's always those weird side effects that at the end of the Prilosec commercial that scare us, and actually I'd rather just have heartburn. Well, but this is true as well. People who use marijuana because they think it will calm their anxiety, it actually increases it. Depending on the different strength of the strain or any additives that are put into it, it can actually create things like paranoia, and it can aggravate schizophrenia. So recreational use of marijuana is a problem. And it's equated to what I believe that science tells us is drunkenness. Right? So this would be everybody walking around drunk. Some people it makes really angry. Some people it makes really chill. Marijuana is doing the same thing. It can aggravate issues that are already underlying. But what about medical marijuana? And this is where I think it's important for us as believers to think through differently. So I want to put up some side effects. Really, you don't want any of them, but just comparatively. Sedation, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, constipation. That's awful combination. Respiratory depression, addiction, hormonal dysfunction, muscle rigidity, hyperalgesia, delayed gastric emptying. I don't want whatever that is. Or you could have a headache, dry mouth, dry eyes, lightheadedness, dizziness, drowsiness, fatigue, nausea, paranoid thinking, dissociation. So you can need some Visine, some Funyuns and Mountain Dew and other things and take a nap on the right as opposed to delayed gastric emptying and whatever craziness that sounds like. Well, if we just put side effects up here, marijuana seems like a lot better. It seems less intense than what's taking place. These are typical opioid side effects as opposed to marijuana. And this is with THC included. These are side effects of the psychoactive drug. If we remove the psychoactive drug, most of these decline and either disappear completely or they're at a very minimal effect. So medicinal marijuana. I think it's important for us as believers to distinguish recreational from medicinal marijuana, which we'll call cannabis. And I think further we need to understand the difference between elements that have THC versus things that are just like CBD. Right? What's coming in popularity right now is this idea of CBD oil and how it can be used. And CBD has been discussed in cancer patients, HIV treatment, and other things. And it's important for us to distinguish that. And this is where I think Christians should be more open and discerning and understanding medical marijuana and the possibility of its use. But why are we culturally hesitant to it? Well, here's why, right? Let's be fair. This is the real reason that culturally when we hear medical marijuana, we think of Cheech and Chong. Maybe not them specifically. You might have remembered this movie of Half-Baked. You might remember the stoners in this movie. If you haven't seen either one of those, I don't recommend them. But this forms a lot of what we think of and associate with it. But if we think about medicinal marijuana appropriately, maybe we can have a little fun and joke about it and just say, if laughter is the best medicine and marijuana makes you laugh, is marijuana the best medicine? That's a joke. I'm just kidding. Feel free. just a question. It's just a question. Medicinal marijuana. The National Institute of Health has just produced a report that they worked on, a study they worked on in 2017, that indicates that cannabis, so non-THC, non-psychoactive treatment, is a suitable, if not better, replacement for opioid-based medication. Further, it says that 80% of the respondents say that the cannabis by itself was more effective than their opioids. Right? So it's more effective even. The people taking it say, I actually have less pain taking the cannabis, and they don't experience the side effects that are taking place with the opioid. The National Academy of Science in 2017 reports that conclusive evidence exists that cannabis's efficacy in treating chronic pain. Now, not every pain, opioids may need to still exist, but cannabis can be a suitable replacement. And this is coming from multiple areas of research. The study found a similar pattern when looking at substituting cannabis for things like Tylenol and Advil. Now, it's stronger than Tylenol and Advil, so we don't want to advocate for it being used over the counter. But for people who are experiencing organ failure or they have significant organ damage, because that's what Tylenol and Advil produce, namely with the liver, cannabis can be a suitable solution for their pain reduction or their pain management. Now, the research is based on patient perception, and so many people argue that this is a weakness. But how else do we measure pain? How else do we measure pain management? If it's not through, well, I guess I could give you this drug and punch you in the face and give it a minute, give you another drug and stab you in the leg and see what hurts worse. But we have to base it on patient perception. And cannabis or marijuana is not a replacement for over-the-counter medication, but where we see significant problems related to things like acetaminophen and ibuprofen, it can be a replacement. Further, while it's always difficult to draw cause and effect, that's straight lines are always difficult to do, what we do see is that there is a massive reduction in opioid deaths, spending on opioid, both in prescription and illicit use. And further, we see less traffic accidents where cannabis is used medicinally as opposed to opioid-based. There's not the high, right? If we eliminate the THC, we use the CBD for pain treatment, we remove the high, whereas opioid is always going to have the high. And so then we're still able to treat the pain. Further, both the National Institute of Health and National Academy of Sciences agree that the option of medical marijuana for pain may assist in pain management for a safer environment, less risk, and produce less public harms. Right? Science is just telling us, and we need to continue to listen and hear, but I think we need to be more open as believers to allowing CBD and cannabis to be used medicinally. Right? So, is it permissible? I think so. I think so. I think as believers, we need to keep our ears and antennas up. So while we would not advocate for recreational use, I do believe that it is possible for us to think through it well about it being used medicinally in light of our cultural climate, which is the opioid epidemic is crushing our culture. Right? And that's only increasing. So can we use a product that doesn't get us high that treats many of the same things? So what? So what do we do as Christians? Well, I think as Christians, we need to be prepared. We need to be adequately equipped to address these things. And I don't think that ignorance is okay. The president of the school that I work at, Dr. Danny Aiken, says, we don't need more stupid saints. Mm-hmm. If you know Dr. Aiken, he can be pretty pointed. But I think he's right. I think culturally, as believers, it is helpful. Is it necessary always? I wouldn't say necessary. I think Bible knowledge is necessary. But it's helpful for us as we engage our neighbors that we don't seem like ignorant, backwood, uneducated people. And I think this is one of the areas that we can think through. In the same way as John was mentioning in there, as we think through sexual immoralities, we think through transgender and LGBTQ issues, all these different things, it's good for us to know what is actually taking place in the world around us. It helps us to contextualize and navigate gospel conversations. Recreational use is not permissible for Christians, in my opinion. It's intoxicating. It stands in opposition to biblical prescriptions to pursue sober-mindedness. But I think medicinal should be considered. I think growing research tells us that it should be something that can be used. Can't be used for every type of pain. No medication fixes everything. But it can serve in these areas. It can be muscle relaxants for severe pain. It does see success in cancer and HIV treatments. It does see success in severe gastrointestinal issues. It does help treat the symptoms of Parkinson's, right? We have scientific proof that these things are helpful if we can remove some of the stigma that exists. But I would argue that this doesn't mean that we set up doctor's offices next to dispensaries, that it actually should be well-educated medical professionals that are prescribing it just as they would. Quite frankly, it's been a bit reckless with opioids. 58% of our country shouldn't be on opioids. But perhaps we can have a suitable alternative to this. And not every patient should receive the same treatment. Cannabis may work where opioids don't. And so we need a more well-rounded and organized thinking about cannabis and medicinal marijuana. So that's a lot about marijuana. But I think 1 Corinthians 10, 31 through 33 offer us some helpful ways to think about marijuana, how we engage the culture, how we share the gospel, how we in our personal lives think through it. But then also What do we do about government regulations and how do we go about these things? And I think thinking through whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do everything for the glory of God. Give no offense to Jews or Greeks or the church of God, just as I also try to please everyone and everything, not seeking my own benefit, but just to John's point in here that reconciled ones, but for the benefit of many, that they may be saved. I think it's important for us to think well about things like marijuana or cannabis or any of the different things that are going on, not just for our own sake, but for the sake of engaging the gospel for Christ. How does marijuana fit into disciple making? It's the world we live. And being able to have reasonable, educated conversations only helps us to further our opportunity to share the gospel to where we can stand culturally against the immorality of recreational use while being open to medicinal use because it removes the dangers that recreational use poses. And so I think this verse helps us to think through. Let's stand against things that that cause intoxication and stand against biblical principles while at the same time promoting health and benefits for all. That includes standing against the opioid epidemic and perhaps promoting cannabis use for medical reasons. Any questions? That's a whole bunch of stuff I just threw at you about marijuana in 45 minutes.
You know, where we live right now, kind of the argument is it's illegal.
Yeah.
In 10 years, it will be legal. That's just a fact.
Yep.
Then the argument no longer is, should you do it because it's illegal? Mm-hmm. Then we'll go to, well, it makes you drunk.
Yeah.
But when you begin to see, and if you begin to see a moderation movement within marijuana,
yep.
which will happen, mm-hmm. And then it becomes, you know, measurable in terms of ingestion,
yep.
that you could develop a category of recreational use that would equate and be very similar to the way someone might have a beer or recreation and drink in ways that are appropriate and
yep.
are not betraying this kind of sober-minded category.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think that's potential. That's yet to be seen because of the strength of THC. So the question would be is could you produce a product that produced the desired effects of THC that was so reduced, the THC level was so reduced that it could be used in moderation, potentially. But currently, right now, that doesn't exist, right? So if we move towards a moderation movement, it would actually require the development of reduced THC strains. And right now, that's not the intent of the recreational movement. So could that be the case? I'm sure that it could. Again, and then in moderation, are you... So this would be the difference between lubricating and drunkenness, right? Could you promote moderation for the sake of lubricating or loosening up or whatever else? Well, that would be because of the amount of volume of THC. So potentially, the downside is that I actually think we're a long way away from that until it becomes, until recreational use becomes more widespread. It's not as widespread as we think that it is at this point, certainly not to the level of alcohol, then potentially. But this is why, so it'd also be the case of, you know, hard liquor as opposed to beer. If you wanted to make that comparison, right?
So well, and those are, you know, the moderation movement with alcohol yep. is a Christian movement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no.
Again, it was a response to...
Yeah, it was a response to harder liquors and other things like that. Yeah, which is why we have the alcohol levels in beer in the United States that we have. It's usually a 4 to 5%. And that's so it could be used without intoxication. Could that movement come in recreational marijuana use? I'm sure that it could.
Would that change your...
It would. Yeah, I mean, the intoxication is the key. Yeah, so I would certainly evaluate it, A, for its benefits, its cultural usefulness, in light of what I think Paul is instructing us about not bringing offense to any, both within the church or out of the church. So I think it would open the door for that. And so we'd certainly want to evaluate that. We're not there yet, though. So I think it's going to take, it will get there, but I don't think we're there yet. I think we're some time away from that.
Can drug usage justify in war situation? Like for example, when Japanese kamikaze pilots, they were forced to have drugs when they hit the World Harbor.
Yeah.
And then they praised it. That was the, you know, patriotic activities.
Mm-hmm.
Can it be justified in that kind of situation? Or post-war syndrome, or going through trauma?
Yeah, Yeah, and I think in that instance, it would move into the medicinal uses, and I think that, yeah, I think it could be. We use any number of medications or controlled substances to help with things like PTSD or other traumatic situations, end-of-life issues, pain coping mechanisms. So yeah, I think cannabis can be used for that, and certain levels of THC could probably be used for that to help alleviate those pain. In terms of war and other things, it would all depend on the use. If it's meant to numb the person from what's about to take place, I wouldn't say that would be something we would want to promote. Again, I think if we as believers in our world are seeking to promote alertness and mindfulness of our surroundings, that would be something that I think would dissuade us from that. So, yeah, that's where I would say we'd have to press pause on that, because recreational marijuana is not yet to a point where it could be used in similar fashions to alcohol can. It's just not there yet. It's still too strong. So we'd have to synthetically develop marijuana strains that have reduced amount of THC, and most synthetic marijuanas so far make you crazy as opposed to promoting its use. So
are you proposing a non-intoxicating form of marijuana as an impact or some form of solution toward the opioid epidemic?
Yeah,
potentially?
I do think so. I don't think it solves every problem. I actually think we could, as a culture, use less pain-numbing medication in general. But I do think it could help us address. One of the ways that we treat the opioid epidemic now is we give other opioids, which is a really strange solution to me, that we give methadone, or now we have the synthetic fentanyl. These are just other opioids. So I think that a non-intoxicating form of cannabis could help us. I do think it could provide a solution. And I think we're continuing to grow in science that is pointing us in that direction.
I'm asking the question because of just the inherently poor level of success that comes with methadone and Suboxone.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You're treating opioid addiction with opioids. it's a strange thing. But if you could, cannabis doesn't have the withdrawal effects. Cannabis helps offset the withdrawal effects for opioid addiction. So if you're using opioids illicitly and you need to come off of it, instead of methadone or fentanyl, you could use cannabis and wean yourself off of the opioids, and cannabis doesn't bear the same side effects and it reduces withdrawal symptoms. So I actually think cannabis could be a solution for even getting off of opioids.
I will submit that opioid addicts have been trying to do the marijuana maintenance for many years.
But now that we're in a climate to where it can be used in greater controlled fashions instead of, for lack of a better word, homemade attempts, I think that this is a better solution. And if we can remove some of the THC side effects, the intoxication, then we can move towards more sober-mindedness in it. So I think more medically controlled environments to use cannabis, and not necessarily THC marijuana, would actually produce better results. And there's some science being done to try to see that, not just in treatment, but in terms of full cannabis replacement. So I think it has promise to do that. But it's certainly, from the science that I see, it seems to be better than opioid addiction, cannabis use. So I'm not trying to pick between the lesser of two evils. I'm not saying completely eliminate opioid use. There may be appropriate use for it, but not at the expense of something else that might work with less problematic results. Thank y'all very much.